So we have arrived at the next to last day in 2018. And for our church and other churches throughout the world, we can say that 2018 has been another year of trials and sickness and deaths and career challenges and family difficulties, whether it be with spouses, with children, family tensions broadened into friendship or neighbor challenges, maybe fears at work or about the future in general, worries and anxieties that are part of our human condition in a fallen world where we can't control what's going on around us. That's characterized 2018. But that's not all we can say about 2018. It's been another year of not being condemned. It's been another year of God's faithfulness. It's been another year of being secure in our union with Christ. It's been another year of God sparing us from the full-on travesty of our foolishness. It's been another year of God working all things for our good in Christ Jesus. It's been another year of God renewing us with His Word. So life is complicated. Life is complicated because we live in a fallen world surrounded by hardships without and within. And yet these things are also true of the Lord's work through His Word, His power displayed in our weakness. We can say with John chapter 1, verse 5, the light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. And despite the challenges that 2018 may have had for our respective lives, the light shines, and the darkness has not overcome it. The faithfulness and light of God's presence is something not only that we affirm, but that has been true for the people of God as long as there has been people for God. All the way through the beginning chapters of the Bible. His presence and light and faithfulness is not only promised and declared, it's also pictured. And when we think about the tabernacle in the book of Exodus, we're thinking of items and furniture that are pictures of things. I want to talk about how the faithfulness and presence and light of God is pictured for us. And that as we close out 2018 on this last Lord's Day on December the 30th, the day before the end of the year, we're going to think more about what God has told Moses for the Israelites that are going to picture the deepest, most profound, and significant truths that you need to build your life on. The tabernacle was a portable tent which could be set up and taken down. What you have behind me is a picture of the side view of this tabernacle, where a priest has come in. He's entered from the east side, and he has come toward this veil. And that veil on the other side is the Ark of the Covenant. We thought about the Ark of the Covenant last week, a box overlaid with gold, the most important object in this portable tent, the place where God's glory would be manifest. It was to represent His reign and His presence. Degrees of holiness were implied here. So that the closer one got to the Ark of the Covenant, the more sacred the room, indicated by what the room was comprised of. Everything in the most holy place is overlaid with gold. But in the place where this priest is in the picture, he's in the larger of the two rooms of the tabernacle, the larger room called the holy place. The holy place was bigger than the most holy place that was right in front of it behind the veil. And in the holy place, there are some furniture pieces we need to know about today. One, a golden table. You'll see that golden table to his right. It's got some stacks on it. That's stacks of bread. And then to his left, which he's already passed, a shining lampstand. So the two items we want to think about in the tabernacle today, the table for bread and the golden lampstand. And we want to ask a couple questions in our minds as we're tracking through. Number one, what's the practical purpose for these specific items? What are they for? But then number two, is there a symbolic or deeper significance to these items, part of a larger, glorious presentation of a tabernacle dwelling with man? And verses 23 through 30, we're going to see the golden table for bread. And in verses 31 through 40, the golden lampstand. Golden table, golden lampstand. Now, in a divine sanctuary of the ancient world, and by that I mean one of the pagan gods' temples, if you were to go to a temple of the ancient world, you would typically find things fitting what would be in a house, like a god's house. You would find various foods and furniture because a temple was a dwelling place. And if I were to go to your home, I would probably find a table and something that emits light. In keeping with that idea in the ancient world, when they go to the house of God, this tabernacle, this meeting place, this portable tent, they find in the larger room a table, that's the word, wrong word with T, a table in this tabernacle, and they find some light, a lampstand. In verses 23 through 30, we want to think about this golden table for bread. In verse 23, here's what it's made of. You shall make a table of acacia wood. And we've seen that element before. That's what the Ark of the Covenant was constructed from. Acacia wood was found throughout the Sinai region, so it was abundantly available to them. But in verse 23, 2 cubits shall be its length, 1 cubit its breadth, and 1.5 cubits its height. It's not the same dimensions as the Ark of the Covenant. Here's what the size is in feet. It's 3 feet long, 1.5 feet wide, and a little less than 3 feet tall. And so this is not an enormous table, but it's large enough to hold what's going to be put on it. Notice, like the Ark of the Covenant, in verse 24, it's going to be made of wood and overlaid with gold. Verse 24 says, you shall overlay it with pure gold and make a molding of gold around it. Everything in the most holy place and in the holy place that's a piece of furniture is overlaid with gold. Only outside of the tabernacle do you see things made of bronze in terms of the furniture. And that's because the elements increase in value the closer you get to the glory of the Lord in the most holy place. In verse 25, you shall make a rim around it, a handbreadth wide, a molding of gold around the rim. This isn't easy to picture. This table in the back corner or the side there, to the priest's right, even though he's probably a high priest, to his right, you see 4 legs, and you see this table, and there's a rim that's been constructed because of verses 24 and 25. There may have been a rim not only at the top, but around the legs midway. That's another way of reading these verses, to really firm up the support, so that's possible. In verse 26, you shall make for it 4 rings of gold. Now, 4 rings of gold, we heard that last week with the Ark of the Covenant. That's because this is meant to be carried and transported as well as everything in the tabernacle. And so 4 rings of gold are going to be put on the corners here or somewhere on the legs. Fasten the rings to the 4 corners at its 4 legs. So probably on the right on the outside, top of the leg at the corner. And in verse 27, close to the frame, the rings shall lie as holders for the poles to carry the table. One of the things we noted last week is that the Ark of the Covenant is not just heaved up by a few strong folks and carried. Rather, those rings that are built into the Ark of the Covenant have poles that go through them so that no human hands touch the ark proper, the actual box itself, but rather touching the poles only, and only priests from Levi's tribe would be given that task. In verse 27, you see that the frame will have rings around it on the corners as holders for the poles. The table also then carried with poles. In verse 28, you shall make the poles of acacia wood and overlay them with gold, and the table shall be carried with these. Well, so there you have it, as explicit as you can make it. So we've drawn a few similarities to the previous item, the Ark of the Covenant, and this one. Both are made first of acacia wood. Both are overlaid with gold. Both have a molding that's added around it. Both have rings, 4 rings on the furniture, and both will be carried using poles made of wood and overlaid with gold. There's a lot of similarity here. In verse 29, what's going to go on this table? The point is not the table itself, but what is upon the table. They don't just have the items we're about to read about just sort of strewn on the ground. where you can sort of see them scattered around. Rather, the table is where they're going to be located. And so I think we're building here to why the table is significant. What does it have on it? In verses 29 and 30, you shall make its plates and dishes for incense, and its flagons, okay, more on that word in a moment, what is a flagon, and bowls with which to pour drink offerings, you shall make them of pure gold, and you shall set the bread of the presence on the table before me regularly. So the table is not a bare table. Even on the one behind this priest to his right, you see stacks of bread. Also on this table would be plates and dishes. Now this reminds us of tables that we have. You have table, you've got things to eat on, things to eat with, things to drink from, food on the table. This is a divine dwelling place, but God doesn't have any needs. He doesn't have this provided in the sanctuary for him. This is significant for what it means toward the people of God, from God toward them. He is the host in this sanctuary, and they have a place at his table. The idea is that the people of God are symbolized by what's taking place on this table. There are no chairs around it, okay? In verses 29 and 30, no chairs on the table, instead plates, dishes, flagons, and bowls. A flagon, I love this word, we should use it more often, it's a large pitcher, it turns out. I had no idea what this word is. Google is amazing, because you can Google, what is a flagon? And here you have this picture. It's huge with a big handle and spout. You might have known that already. I was excited to find that out. And so I'm going to use this word as often as possible. And in verse 29 and 30, what you have on it is essentially what looks like a feast being prepared. Something in this pitcher, probably not water, probably something like wine. Instead, in verse 29 of food, you have plates and dishes for incense. Which, what the high priest is in front of right now is an incense altar, talked about later in Exodus. So things in those bowls would be burned as incense on that altar in front of him. And in verse 29, these little elements, the plates, the dishes, the flagons, the bowls for drink offerings, along with those in verse 30 is bread. When you read about the construction of this later, since these are just instructions right now, the construction is reported in chapter 37:16, that he made vessels of pure gold that were to be on the table, its plates and dishes for incense, and its bowls and flagons with which to pour drink offerings. And so while it's not elaborated on much here, Leviticus 24 and Leviticus 25 goes into some of the incense use of the bowls that are mentioned. All right. When they travel, you got the Ark of the Covenant, you've got this table of gold that we've thought about so far. How do they treat these items in the tabernacle? In the book of Numbers, I want you to listen from chapter 4, beginning in verse 5. Numbers 4, verse 5. When the camp is to set out, Aaron and his sons shall go in and take down the veil of the screen and cover the Ark of the Testimony with it. So the thing I want us to realize is, While we're getting a side view here, the high priest, in front of this veil, he and some other Levites are going to take that veil, walk toward the Ark of the Covenant, and cover it. It does not travel exposed, and nobody throughout Israel sees it. They see the poles sticking out. The Ark of the Covenant is to be covered immediately by a veil. And then, in verse 6, they shall put on it a covering of goatskin and spread on top of that a cloth of all blue and shall put in its poles. In verse 7, over the table of the bread of the presence, they shall spread a cloth of blue and put on it the plates, the dishes for incense, the bowls and the flagons for the drink offering. The regular showbread also shall be on it. They shall spread over them a cloth of scarlet and cover the same with a covering of goatskin and shall put in its poles. Now, what we've seen in just a few verses, Numbers 4, verses 5 through 8, is that these items are going to travel covered. And not just with like a spare sheet or towel, right? But cloths, multiple layers that cover these things so that the poles alone will be seen and carried by the people to whom these items are designated. So this is what they're going to do when they set out from Sinai in the book of Numbers. They're going to be at Numbers until, they're going to be at Sinai until Numbers chapter 10. So they're going to travel with that. Now look back in Exodus 25 with me in verse 30. You shall set the bread of the presence on the table. The table goes by multiple names in Exodus and later books. It can be called the table of gold, the table of the bread of the presence, or the golden table for the bread of the presence. Multiple phrases talking about the same item in the tabernacle. The bread is called the bread of the presence, which literally means the bread before God's face, to be in God's face. Now think about the placement of the table, and I think that descriptor will make sense. Right on the other side of that veil is the glory of God manifest over the lid or the mercy seat of the Ark of the Covenant. So this table is before God's face, if you will. It's the bread before his presence. So the table called the bread of the presence makes sense because of the placement. And the Israelites are familiar with bread. God has been providing them bread up to Sinai, hasn't he? Every morning they go out and they gather manna. He provides them for the months they're at Sinai. And then the journey that follows in Numbers up to the promised land, he still is providing them bread from heaven, the manna. But we find out in Leviticus 24 that this is not a random numbering of loaves of bread. In Leviticus 24, here's what we're told in verses 5 and 6. You shall take fine flour, bake 12 loaves from it, and put them in two piles, six in a pile, on the table of pure gold before the Lord. 12 loaves, not 11, not 13, not 5, not 20. 12 loaves. Why is that significant? Because Israel has 12 tribes. Jacob had 12 sons, which became 12 tribes, and these 12 loaves symbolize the tribes of Israel on the table before the Lord. Two rows of six, which I think is what's tried to be represented back there with that drawing. In Leviticus 24, 8 and 9, every Sabbath day, Aaron shall arrange it before the Lord regularly. It's from the people of Israel as a covenant. And it shall be for Aaron and his sons. They shall eat it in a holy place, since it's for him a most holy portion of the Lord's food offerings, a perpetual due. So here's what we find out when we look at Exodus and Leviticus together. This bread was not meant to stay there beyond the Sabbath day. It was there day after day until the Sabbath when Aaron and other Levitical priests would eat it. And freshly baked bread, 12 new loaves, were put on it for the next week. And then that would stay there until the next Sabbath day. And then that bread would be eaten and 12 new loaves had been baked to put on it again. So week after week, the bread would be dealt with because it represents the constant, faithful provision of the Lord for his people. They are represented at the table. Now, earlier in Exodus 24, Aaron and Nadab and Abihu and Moses and Aaron ate before God in Exodus 24, 11 on Mount Sinai. It was a picture of fellowship and communion. It was a picture of relationship and reconciliation. God was bringing sinners before him. And this table, representing the 12 tribes of Israel, this says to us that the tribes of Israel dwell before God. He provides for them. They are his people, and he is their God. He has brought them to himself, and he has purchased them through redemption, and they belong to him, set apart for his holiness. They are his people. It symbolizes God's providential care and his provision. God is a gracious host, full of love and mercy and faithfulness. Israel has seen that. And even though they murmur, and even though they have complained, and even though they face discontentment, even though they face temptation to sin, over and over again, what they learn about the Lord, despite the failings they learn about themselves, is that God is faithful, and God is good, and God is wise, and the table proclaims that. It's a constant, faithful, week after week, month after month, year after year, provision of the Lord. They can trust Him. He will care for them. They all have a seat at His table. That's what the bread represents. He sustains them in the desert and the wanderings to come in the book of Numbers. All through the long centuries, God has provided what He promised. He gives them daily bread. Jesus picks up this motif when His disciples say, "Teach us how to pray." And He says, "Give us this day our daily bread." That phrase taps into an Old Testament pattern of how God could be counted on every day for His people. You can count on God for every day of 2018 through today and tomorrow. He has shown faithfulness, goodness, wisdom, and care. Despite our murmurings, our discontentment, our sinning, and our failings. All that we might have ever present before our own eyes were, like David in Psalm 51, "My sin may be ever before me." God's goodness and His righteousness and His love, that is what has been proclaimed throughout the people of God's relationship with Him and His Word. You can see this in what's pictured in the tabernacle. You can trust the Lord for tomorrow. It's the last day of 2018. You have woken up to new mercies for 364 days in 2018. You got one more tomorrow. And given the faithfulness of the Lord, I can reasonably project that you will wake up to new mercies tomorrow, right? In other words, we look at something like this in the tabernacle and see the stories of the people of God provided for their caring and loving Maker who has redeemed them and set them apart. They can count on Him for anything that's coming. And listen, friends, we don't know what 2019 is going to bring for us. We don't know what blessings, we don't know what hardships, but you can trust the Lord. He will not fail you. He will not forsake you. I saw someone yesterday, one preacher said, for 2018, let's judge our circumstances by Jesus' love, not Jesus' love by our circumstances. Which is a good order to think about, because we don't know what lies before us, but we know whom we can trust. Now, after Israel leaves Sinai, they take the table as well as the ark and these other items with them with the tabernacle and tear it down. They're going to build it back up in each encampment. They will cross the Jordan River into the Promised Land in the book of Joshua with these items. And even in the temple that is going to be built by Solomon, the bread of the presence will be laid out. This is an important item from here forward. Whether it's a portable tabernacle or what will be replacing the tabernacle, that temple in Jerusalem. Verses 31 through 40 give us another item, the golden lampstand. This takes us to the end of chapter 25. Why would they need a lampstand? There are no windows in the tabernacle, and it's really, really dark. Now, we haven't gotten here yet, but in chapter 26, the tabernacle has layers of curtains and animal skins covering it on all sides. You can't get in the tabernacle and look around and see well, if anything. It's going to be dark. So what you have on the opposite side of the table is a lampstand. You have a lampstand. The word in the original language is menorah. Now, maybe you've used that word or heard that word menorah, where you think of something that has various branches. Now, we might think of a menorah with candlesticks. That's not quite what we would be imagining here. But there's a stand, a shaft of it, that has branches coming out that are seven in number, and there would be little lamps that would be lit. And it's to give light. It would be utterly black in there otherwise. In verse 31, "You shall make a lampstand of," oh, we're not surprised at this at all, "pure gold." Everything in the most holy place and holy place is covered in gold. But notice what it doesn't say. It doesn't say make it out of acacia wood first. You start with gold when it comes to with the lampstand. And this isn't a little bit of gold. In verse 39, it'll all be made out of a talent of pure gold. Now, we don't weigh things in talents, but that's about 75 pounds of gold. This isn't small, and it's not light. So you should not be picturing some miniature lampstand. If you look here, the one right there across from the table is pretty tall. It's a few feet tall. That's probably right. That it doesn't give us a particular cubit height, but as they are forming this from 75 pounds of gold, it's not going to be small and it's not going to be light. Rather, multiple people will be having to carry this as well. And so in verse 31, you shall make a lampstand out of pure gold. It shall be made of hammered work. Its base, its stem, its cups, its calyxes. I had to look up what that was. Here the ESV says calyx, C-A-L-Y-X. Your translation may say something different if you have something other than the ESV. But it's the bud-like part of the flower. And so what they're picturing here is a lampstand that looks like something growing. It's going to have not just gold, but buds that are built into it. What look like flowers, all of one piece with it in verse 31. This could have been 4 or 5 feet tall as a lampstand. Notice it's not sitting on a table. So this isn't a lampstand sitting on a table. This is a lampstand sitting on the floor, a floor standing and tall light giver. In verse 32, it shall have 6 branches going out from the sides. 3 of the lampstand out of one side, 3 branches of the lampstand out the other. Well, that's what's represented here. You've got the middle of it, the shaft of it, the base of it, and then out of the sides, 3 on one end, 3 on the other. Well, if we count those up, if you start with the 1 on the stand itself and then add 3 and then 3, you're dealing with 7. You're dealing with 7. Which is complemented by, in verse 37, 7 lamps that are to go on the ends of these branches. So back to verse 33. 3 cups are going to be made like almond blossoms, each with calyx and flower on one branch. 3 cups made with almond blossoms, each with calyx and flower on the other branch. So for the 6 branches. What does that refer to? This means we've got 7 branches. Each branch is going to have 3 flower, gold flower-like images in it, as well as this calyx, this flower-like thing. Looks like a tree, looks like a plant. In verse 34, the lampstand itself shall have 4 cups made like almond blossoms with their calyxes and flowers, and a calyx of 1 piece with it under each pair of the 6 branches going out from the lampstand. What I think this means is you've got 7 branches. Each branch has 3 little almond bud-like things built onto it, except the middle, the stem, it has 4. So if we multiply 3 times the 6 branches, we have 18. And if we add the 4 that are going to be on the middle, you have 22. So 22 cups, almond blossoms, calyx, flower-like things built on this. That might look strange to you unless we realize that this is supposed to be a tree of light. That it's supposed to look like something that you would say, it looks like someone took something they were growing and made a representation of it out of gold. This might even be more significant when we realize multiple things in the tabernacle recall the Garden of Eden. So that what you have coming before the Lord is this tree that gives light. You have cherubim that are over the Ark of the Covenant itself behind the veil, which remind us of the cherubim that barred people from the presence of the Lord in Genesis 3. There will be plenty of echoes to come, but it looks as if the tabernacle is a way of saying, hey, you all belong in Eden, and I've not given up on that. Eden is where you belong. You were made for it. And so there are going to be glimpses of Eden in the tabernacle and later in the temple. In fact, you will find that this veil that covers the Ark of the Covenant, when the high priest goes behind the veil once a year on the Day of Atonement, that veil has in it pictures and images of cherubim. So that what he's doing is going through the cherubim represented there as if they're standing guard with the presence of God and entering there. Some have wondered if this lighted tree, if this tree of light is representing the tree of life in the Garden of Eden. Knowing that the Ark of the Covenant, having within it the law of God that must be kept, might represent the tree of knowledge of good and evil, which would be death for all those who crossed it. And they could not touch the Ark of the Covenant, lest they surely die. And so there may be ways of looking at the tabernacle here and that the furniture is recalling the home of the first couple. In verse 37, you shall make seven lamps for it, and the lamp shall be set up as to give light on the space in front of it. These would be little bitty containers. This is not a set of candles. This would be little containers that would hold oil and some sort of wick that would be lit. And these little cups are going to be important because of verse 38 tells us, various items used. Tongs and trays. The tongs and the trays are probably for messing with what's being lit, whether it's trimming the wick or adding oil or whatever they needed to do. The tabernacle and what's represented with the lamp, I think it's a structure of hope, a structure reminding us of the Garden of Eden, where God is coming to dwell with sinners. Now, obviously, Sinai is not Eden, and the Promised Land isn't either that they're going to. But God has made people in His image, male and female, that He might dwell with them in everlasting joy and peace, and that they might know His glory and be filled with His fullness and life. And here, I think what the table and the lampstand are communicating to us is, you're not in Eden right now, but God is going to bring you home. You've got a place at His table, and He is the light for us. They've been led by light up to this point. A pillar of cloud by day and fire by night up to Sinai. And even on Sinai, the light of the glory of God is seen at the core of the mountain where the fire of the Lord consumes it. Moses had earlier encountered the Lord with a burning bush. And so a plant-like thing that's burning reminds us of the presence and glory of God. And it's lighting up the whole room. You were made for Eden. Sin has created a barrier between you and a holy God, but fear not, He is coming for you. Tabernacle is a place of hope. It reminds us there are barriers, but not so great that God cannot overcome them. So in verse 38, the tongs and the trays, which would be used for this lampstand, shall be of pure gold. We learn later in Exodus and Leviticus, that Aaron and his sons were to tend the lamps every day. While the table was dealt with once a week, the lampstand was dealt with every single day. In fact, according to chapter 30 and chapter 27 of Exodus, the tending could have been done twice by the different priests, which would have included Aaron. This might have involved trimming the wicks, making sure if something hadn't gone out, relighting as necessary, filling with oil. They couldn't just check on this once a week, is what I'm saying. This was to, in some way, be an ever-burning light. The tending of the lampstands did not stop with the tabernacle. When they traveled with the lampstand, you see in Numbers chapter 4, I read from Numbers 4 earlier about the Ark of the Covenant and the table. Listen to Numbers 4 beginning in verse 9. And they shall take a cloth of blue and cover the lampstand for the light, with its lamps, its tongs, its trays, all the vessels for oil with which it's supplied, and they shall put it with all its utensils in a covering of goatskin and put it on the carrying frame. So again, covering these important golden items. Would not have been small, would not have been light, and I mean weight-wise, of course it's light in other ways, but you have here traveling with it to the Promised Land. When the temple is built, there are lampstands, plural, that are constructed. We learned that not just one lampstand was in the temple, but Solomon had 10 constructed in 1 Kings 7. The temple in Jesus' day used them. The temple was much larger. In fact, most of the dimensions of the temple were twice the tabernacle. And so you find cubits that are in the tabernacle sections doubled in the temple sections, a larger, much grander complex, including 10 times as many lampstands. All of these items, though, they're significant when Jesus says things like, "I am the light of the world." And he does so saying it in Jerusalem, where the light of the nations would be the people of God, their sanctuary, where there would be lights burning day and night. And Jesus says, "I am the light of the world." And he says things like, "I am the bread of life." John tells us in John 1:14 that Christ is the Word that has become flesh and tabernacled among us. Last week we thought about that word dwelt. It does mean dwelt. Most translations have something like that. But dwelt like a sanctuary with us, tabernacled with us. So that what he has is bread to give and light to give. Because he's the glory of God in our midst, veiled by his humanity. He came to tabernacle among us in the incarnation. He is God with us. Last week we thought about the tragedy that later in Israel's history, the Ark of the Covenant, along with other temple items, would be looted and taken by Nebuchadnezzar in 586 BC and before. It culminated in the destruction of the city, the temple, the exile of the people. And even though later the people were allowed to return under a new empire, they never recovered the Ark of the Covenant. It might have been melted down and used for other stuff. It was a tragedy that there was no Ark of the Covenant when the temple had been rebuilt. And even in Jesus' day, no Ark of the Covenant. And if you have this sad sense, which as readers is right, where the Ark represented the presence of God with them, the glory of God with them, and it's gone missing. Is it ever going to be replaced? In Christ, it is given and all the more. He tabernacled among us as one greater than the Ark of the Covenant. And so we don't need the Ark of the Covenant because we have Christ. He is better than the bread on the golden table. They had to take that out every week. And you had to put more. 12 loaves, count them up, put them on the table. The next week, the bread's gone stale. Or it would if it wasn't eaten. And then the lampstand. You got to deal with that day and night, dealing with the wicks, dealing with the oil, dealing with what might have gone out, relining it day after day after day. Jesus says, "I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will not walk in darkness, will have the light of life. I am the bread of life. The one who hungers and eats of me will never hunger again." Jesus is not only greater than the Ark of the Covenant, he's better than the bread on the table, and he's brighter than the lampstand. He's better and he's brighter because he's everlasting bread and he's everlasting light. He's the climactic display of faithfulness and presence and love of God. One thing that we noted in December was on the 21st of December, we had the shortest day. I don't know if you were aware of it when you woke up on December 21st, but you were going to have the shortest day of the year and the longest night. Sunset that day on December 21st was at 5:21 p.m. Now, prior to that day, all the daylight was just getting shorter and shorter and shorter until December 21st. And you have the shortest amount of daylight. But then after that, daylight gradually gets and stays longer. With December 21st behind us, it will only get lighter. We'll put it another way. The deepest darkness is behind us, not in front of us. And for the people of God, the resurrection of Jesus Christ, his glorious work upon the cross, his incarnation before that, all of this is bringing the kingdom and new creation work of God. He rose from the dead on the third day, invincible and immortal. The light has dawned, and the light and the glory will only increase. Isaiah says so. Isaiah 9:7, of the increase of his government and of his peace, there will be no end on the throne of David and over his kingdom to establish it and uphold it with justice and righteousness from this time forth and forevermore. The deepest darkness is behind us. The long night of death and our transgressions is now past. It is the light of his glory and power and presence that has come and will never be extinguished or overcome. Our future is glory. That is what awaits the people of God. The deepest darkness is behind us. We are heirs of a new heavens and a new earth. Christ will make all things new. When the Apostle John was given a vision of the glorious future that awaits the people of God, here's what he wrote in Revelation 21. You've heard these words. Hear them anew in light of the tabernacle. He says, I saw no temple in the New Jerusalem, for its temple is the Lord God, the Almighty, and the Lamb. And the city has no need of sun or moon to shine on it, for the glory of God gives it light, and its lamp is the Lamb. By its light the nations walk, and the kings of the earth bring their glory into it. The gates are never shut. There will be no night there. They will bring the glory and honor of the nations into it. But nothing unclean will ever enter it, nor anyone who does what is detestable or false. Only those who are written in the Lamb's book of life. A cosmic new creation tabernacle awaits us. We are made for Eden and then some. Our future is glory, and God's presence will be what we know, and the lamp will be the Lamb. He is our hope. The deepest darkness is behind us. And now what we need to do, what we must do, is look to Christ in faith. We must trust in what he has done upon the cross, in his resurrection from the dead, and in his present work as King of Kings and Lord of Lords, is our only hope, for he has shown that he is the way, the truth, and the life. And there is no way to be reconciled to God, the unrighteous to the righteous, the unholy to the holy, except through the mediator who is Jesus Christ, the true and greater high priest, greater than the Ark of the Covenant, and one who is everlasting bread and everlasting light. You need Jesus. We hear the gospel message and we see the truths of Scripture, and then we see them pictured even in wonderful items like a golden lampstand and a golden table, and we realize that one day all of these things are going to reach their fulfillment in Christ Jesus, who is our Redeemer forever. And we love that this is the case, and we long to know him. And in 2019, it will be another year for us to live for his glory. It will be another year to be united with Christ everlastingly and to feast of his goodness and wisdom and power. Do not fear, friends. You know what this furniture says to us? We are not too sinful for God. We have not done too much or gone so far that his grace cannot reach us. You know what this says to us? This says to us, he has a place at the table for you. This says to us, he has left the light on for you. You should come to him by his power and by his spirit. Trust in and look to Christ. He will not turn you away. He will welcome you home. It's what you were made for.